You are on the air.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few black-owned radio stations, and you're live with the best mind in black America, me, Sean Williams, and this is the Cutting Edge Show. This evening, my guest is Alonzo Waheed Sr., the lead organizer for Equity and Transformation. He is a 2020 fellow with the Electoral Justice League, and thank you for being on my show.
Thank you all for having me here today.
We will be discussing several topics. We will start with black self-care and self-love. So, Alonzo, please tell us about this.
Well, a lot of people don't really pay attention to the fact that we need a lot of black love and a lot of black self-care. At a time when individuals are traumatized, going through a lot of hurt, going through a lot of anger, I felt that this was a great opportunity to bring this to the forefront, that if we don't address issues, whereas we hold in a lot of hurt, hold in a lot of pain, hold in anger, the ultimate solution or results of that would be an individual imploding. So we have to figure out different ways that we could release this tension within inside ourselves and find productive ways to do it, whereas we're not causing harm to ourselves or others, and wanted to make sure that we brought this to the forefront to talk about what it means to have black self-care.
Alonzo, why do you think black self-care is important?
Well, it goes back to an individual actually going through post-traumatic stress. And post-traumatic stress disorder is a type of anxiety order that happens to a lot of people and is often overlooked. It happens after either a very deeply threatened or scary event, or even if you weren't directly involved, the fact that you saw it, you heard it, all right, the shock of what happened can be so great that you have a hard time adjusting or going back to a normal life. Why this is so important is, especially for African Americans, is that we have continued to be traumatized. We have continued to live in threatening situations, all the way to the point whereas it's normal for us to live in dysfunction. So the truth is, we haven't really had a chance to live because we steady are operating in survival mode. And this is where you get that post-traumatic stress. This is where you get the fact that you're always thinking everybody is against you, or you can't trust anyone. You have to always have your defense up. And this is normal to us, right? This is normal to us as a people. Whereas it starts internalizing itself and showing up physically. Whereas we're having high blood pressure, we're having anxiety disorders, all right? Then it shows up mentally, whereas you're feeling as though not only you can't trust anyone, but everybody is always out to get you. And I wanted to make sure that we addressed that. We took time to apply some self-care to that because we can't wait for someone else to figure it out for us and tell us this is what we should be doing to make sure that we're in a better and a healthier situation.
Okay. What are some of the things that we can take part in black self-care and self-love?
Well, first off, it's just acknowledging that you're worth it. I think that that's the very beginning of it, where and then you start looking at what you need to do. And that, what do you need to do to better yourself, and why you're worth it, why you're so, that you're important enough, whereas you could now take some time out to figure out what works for you. One of the things that is very important about this is that you need to be able to identify what's stressing you, what's ticking you off, what's pushing your buttons, right? So then from that, you can get out or remove yourself from stressful, which can lead to harmful situations. If that environment is not conducive to your growth, then that's not an environment that you need to be in. And often it's a toxic situation, whether it's people, whether it's smells, whether it's just that, so that environment, right? If it's not conducive to your growth and it's making you feel uncomfortable, you should try to remove yourself from that. And that's right there is one of the first things that you need to do. The second thing I would say is start learning how to develop healthy responses. A lot of times individuals that's been through trauma, people will point out that they're always angry or that they're acting in a volatile way. The thing is because they witnessed or was a victim of a harm. So this is why they act out that way. So now you yourself, if you're recognizing that that is something that you do, you have to reprogram yourself to start figuring out what is a healthy response instead of the unhealthy response that you've been exhibiting. One of the third things, and I think is really important, is to start establishing boundaries for yourself and also for others. A lot of times we find ourselves becoming toxic garbage dumps for other people. You listen to them talk about everything that caused them harm that day, everything that ticked them off, everything that pushed their buttons, and they come and they release all of that and then leave it right there with you. Some individuals even go so far as to take it out on you, right? And then you self-analyze it and say, well, I had to let them say that to me, right? And you didn't speak up for yourself. And then you didn't say, you know, I didn't do that to you. Why are you addressing me with that, right? So at that point, one of the things that I think is very important is to establish boundaries. Make sure that after you figured out what's pushing your buttons and what's ticking you off, that when you figure out what's a positive environment for you, you start making sure that you're staying in those positive environments, or you create that positive environment for yourself. Then you start learning and working on healthy responses instead of negative or unhealthy responses. And after that, you start establishing boundaries for yourself, knowing that if you're in a certain situation and you know that by the time it gets to a heightened point, you just have your ticker saying, okay, they said they already looking at me crazy. All right, now they're walking over here towards me. If they say one more thing, I'm going to respond like this. So before they say that one more thing, make sure that since that's your boundary, you start developing a path out of that situation. So now you're learning how to manage and conduct yourself better, which helps you to be able to take care of yourself, because ultimately it's about you. And I have a couple of more steps that we could talk about a little bit later.
Okay, and what are some of the techniques of the Black self-care?
One of the techniques that I love a lot is just having some time to yourself, having some time to meditate. You know, a lot of times we don't pay attention to the little small things, but just having, even if you said, you know what, I'm going to make it as a practice for me to take 5 minutes out of the day just for me. I'm not going to think about work. I'm not going to think about the kids. I'm not going to think about these bills that I have. I'm not going to think about the next meeting. I'm not going to think about what I need to do or what I can do for someone else. I'm going to take 5 minutes just for me. Block everything out. Not think about none of those things, and just let my mind, let my body just rest. I'm going to do me some breathing techniques. I'm going to center myself, right? I'm going to think me some positive thoughts, and then from there you go. One of the practices that I truly enjoy, and I think that we really should bring this back to the forefront, is not only self-visualization, but we should also go back to affirmations, whereas we affirming ourselves, not waiting for someone else to do it. You got to dig deeper down to yourself and realize who you are. Realize that you're worth it. Realize that you're everything that you truly want to be. Because if you're not truly believing it yourself, you've already defeated yourself, right? And this is why you're able to accept so much negativity from everybody and everywhere else, because you've already accepted it yourself. But when you know that you're better than that, it's very hard to accept something that's beneath you unless you choose to do that. And then you have to figure out why you did that and you made that decision. And some people move like that. But once we start getting into actually visualizing who we are, who we want to be, and taking steps to operate to become that, we start affirming ourselves, all right? And then, like I said, start taking that 5 minutes out for yourself. But one of the best things that I like, and it was a dear, close friend of mine who taught me this, and it was just get away, all right? Just plan a day where you just get away, and it's away from it all. And with that, you go and you plan a date for yourself. All right, you go do something that you've been wanting to do. You go get you a nice drink that you like, or you go eat you some ice cream. Just start taking in the small little things that you enjoy, honestly remembering who you are and doing the things that will make you better. I think that we've gotten away from the fact that we live this life and we go through this life helping and doing everything for everyone else. And we often forget ourselves. And it's time to take the care for yourself because you are important also.
Oh, that was excellent. I already used several of those techniques. And also, can you tell me about equity and transformation and who founded it?
Richard Wallace of Chicago founded Equity and Transformation. And Equity and Transformation is a not-for-profit, community-led organization whose mission is to build social and economic equity with Black Chicagoans engaged in the informal economy. So what that means is that we work with individuals in the informal economy, in the informal communities, to make sure that they also have equity. A lot of times, you know, individuals had no idea of what's going on with the informal community and realize that they're not balanced, that the scales aren't balanced. And with the scales not being balanced, we want to correct that, saying that there should be more than an even playing field. These are individuals that have worked for everyone else, and they're at the bottom of the totem pole. And if we could bring them up to speed and raise the bar higher for them, then we can now truly have equity. So that's part of the work that Equity and Transformation does.
Okay, and could you explain to me about the informed community?
So the informal community is real simple, all right? So we can, so everyone can understand it. The informal community is individuals in a diversified set of economic activities, enterprises, jobs that's not regulated or protected by the state. So when you look at the loose square sellers, the scrap metal traders, child care providers, individuals selling cannabis, commercial sex workers, bootleg DVD sellers, the guy selling the socks in the middle of the street, individuals that figured out a way, basically, who had to hustle because they didn't have no other way of employment. So they created their own job. So this is the informal economy. And so with that being said, could you give me an example of an individual that you may think that's in the informal economy?
Yes, a drug dealer. Somebody selling water on the street.
Somebody selling water on the streets. Exactly. So that's who we're out here fighting for, all right? And why this is important is because the informal economy isn't new. It isn't something that just got created. 85% of the world operates in a formal economy. And even if you looked right in your own community, think about this. If it was a guy that's out there selling weed, or it was a girl who said, well, I'm going to braid your hair. Or it was a guy that said, well, you know what, while you're at work, I'll keep the kids, right? We've always worked together to figure out what we needed to do to survive, and we barter and traded with one another. And this is how most of the world actually works. But now, why this is so important is that every economy, right, every business, every trade that we had that was first informal, what happens in Western civilization is they criminalize this activity. So you see this when you had bootlegging, all right? When you had bootlegging, it was the worst thing. Individuals was demonized. They would say that these were people from hell and that they just wasn't no good, right? But what they don't tell you is that it was a lot of individuals that was bootlegging that were people of color. And you have, and this should be a straight connection to this because we were the ones who were in agriculture. We was the ones who was farming the land. So, of course, we knew how to take the corn, take the potatoes, take the wheat, take all of these things and turn it into alcohol, right? But what happens is now they demonize the individuals that's doing it. Then that makes it easy for them to criminalize it. And then with that, they could do anything that they want to do to you. But then while we come in and we say, hey, wait a minute, how come after the prohibition, you don't find no individuals of color that's involved in a liquor business? And that right there is where the problems occur at, right? As long as it's illegal, then they can associate it with African-Americans, associate it with blacks. It's criminalized. But then when it becomes legal, you don't see not one black distillery nowhere. You don't hear about no African-Americans owning no distilleries. Now, you may see individual with a label. You may see Ciroc, Amsterdam, and, you know, you got this. But those are all labels, right? We're talking about who actually makes the liquor, all right? And then we go even further to say, how many black-owned liquor stores do we have, right? So we don't have the distribution, and we don't have the manufacturing of it, all right? So then you go even further, and you say, well, what about the lottery? Well, the numbers game used to employ about 85% of African-Americans in the whole country, right? But now, right now, you have the lottery, and don't know African-Americans own that. Okay, and so as we follow this, we see that as long as it's illegal, right, or as long as we're doing it, it's made out to be illegal. But the minute that corporate America can see that they can make money off of it, it becomes legal, and then we're automatically cut out. Why this is so important is these were the jobs that took care of us. This was our economy. So now, how do we take care of ourselves? And then what happens to the fact that our families were torn apart, individuals lost their lives, okay? And then not only that, communities were torn apart because these communities were targeted, whereas no resources went into these communities. But now, okay, that is legal. How come individuals can continue to make money off of these communities, but they don't put anything back into the communities? So the work with equity and transformation is to balance those scales out and say, no, we deserve our fair share at this, and we're going to do what it takes to make sure that we get it. And that's why I'm so happy about the cannabis legislation that we've recently passed. It's not doing everything that we hoped it would do, but right off the bat, we was able to have about 30,000 individuals able to receive expungements. We have the largest equity cannabis bill in the country right now, all right? But we want to make sure that the legislation is actually enforced and individuals aren't taking advantage of individuals that were impacted by the war on drugs, because what the cannabis bill does is it looks at the disparity between individuals that were selling marijuana, individuals that were caught with it and was in prison, and then looking at where we're at now. So these individuals are now able to get expungements, and then individuals are also able to go into the market to sell cannabis because they're experts. So right now we just want to make sure that we're ironing out some of the bumps in the road right now, and want to make sure that that money that's coming in from the taxes are put back into the communities which they're so rich, that they're so righteously deserved, because these were the communities that were affected by the war on drugs, which was targeting African Americans.
Okay, and is that the HB 1438?
Yes, that's HB 1438, and it's a reparation bill that point to the fact that individuals in the urban communities were disenfranchised and were targeted through the war on drugs. So therefore, they're looking at the tax money that's coming in from this should be able to come back into the communities and repair the hurt and harm that was caused by the war on drugs.
Okay, and could you tell me about some more recent legislation?
So more recent legislation that we're currently working on right now is looking at defund the police, and that's the work that I'm doing with the Electoral Justice League. And with me being a fellow in 2020, they helped me to not only learn how to strategize politically, but also learn how to fundraise, how to organize a whole lot better, and most importantly, understand the plight of our community and how to address it. And one of the things that we're looking at addressing is that the police need to be defunded. So what that means is that we're not saying that there's not going to be any police officers. What that means is when you have a situation where the police are making $60,000, $100,000 in a community that's 15 to 30% of these individuals are living below poverty. And while they're living below poverty, about 85% of those individuals are African Americans, and those individuals are now being policed by an individual, by the police department, and these police are making $80,000, okay, or more. What happens is we start creating a caste system, whereas the individuals that's living below the poverty rate, they're looked at as though they don't matter. They're looked at as though that they're a problem. And more importantly than that, while we're also looking at, and this is very important, why the police need to be defunded is because you can't militarize, and that's why I said that part first. You bring them in with these military skills, you bring them in with this military machinery, and then you're targeting this certain community and saying, go over there and use this force against them. And the only thing that's different than them and the rest of the community is their skin color and how much money that and how much income they're bringing in. So when we have a situation like that, we're looking at the police not only need to be defunded, but the money that's coming up out of the police needs to go back into the communities to repair the harm. And it's not just building social programs, but it's also creating strategies to make sure that all the injustices that have been going unchecked are now could now be addressed. For instance,
okay,
when you look at Chicago, one of the things so to me, you can take these numbers, right, and you can look at any city in this country that has a black population. And so, for instance, when you see Chicago, we start talking about equity, per capita income in Austin, right, a major black Chicago neighborhood. In Austin, it's 16,000. Garfield Park, 10,000. Inglewood, 12,000. So all are nearly 20,000 below the Chicago average per capita income of $34,000, right? And 81% now of African American males, between 17 and 24 in Garfield Park, these individuals are unemployed, all right? Unemployed. So this is where the problem is at right now. How come these individuals here are unemployed? Not only where are the jobs at, right? Not only where are the jobs at, but how come that this community here was targeted? And I think that we should, like, this here is where the focus definitely needs to be at, because it's not by happenstance that individuals in these communities are not only living below the poverty rate, but they're being targeted because of their living below the poverty rate.
Okay, and what can we do to help these individuals, 17 to 24, with employment?
I think that the biggest thing that we need to do is take a step back and consider what do we see as employment? Because one of the biggest things that needs to come out is that there are not as many jobs as we think there are. So first of all, when we have all of these programs that come out and say, well, we have a jobs program, right? And we're going to train you for this position, right? But after you get through training them for that position and they get their certificate and they completed that program, where do they go to work at? Like, where is the job for them, right? And then how long is that job going to last? So I think that we have to really take a deep dive into that and look and see what are the jobs that we're talking about. Can we actually employ the whole community, right? And then if that's not so, how do we start teaching more entrepreneurship? How do we start teaching more investment? How do we start teaching more money management? Because these are all of the skill sets that have been tossed out of the window, right? And along with that, we have to incorporate civic engagement so individuals understand how their dollar has power and how individuals in positions of authority that you have put into that place of authority or who has that position, making sure that they are fulfilling their responsibilities and duties, not only to the community, but also to you. And I think that's where we start at right there.
Okay. If you have any questions or want to make a comment, you can call 516-531-9540 and press 1. So, Lonzo, could you tell me what else you have going on?
Well, we're doing the work with the Electoral Justice League, and if anybody wanted to become a part of that to get more information about that, you can text DEFUND, D-E-F-U-N-D, to 90975, and then you will get the information that can line you up with us, that can talk to you, well, I mean, not talk to you, but give you the information about what we're doing as it comes to defunding the police and working on the reform bills. One of the things that we're looking at with these reform bills right now, not just with the Electoral Justice League, but we're looking at getting legislation passed to make sure that local police provide data and tracking information on their use of force, because they don't do that right now. Another thing that we're looking at is funding to investigate the local police departments. We're looking to ban a chokehold and a cardio hold. Like, this should have been done a long time ago. And the fact that the police officers get to hide behind this blue shield of protection, and they're saying that this is how I was trained, or this wasn't against the law for me to do that, so then they're able to walk away, we're saying that the time is up for that. So we want to make sure that we're implementing these laws and also have a national database of police misconduct, because how can you continue to have all this misconduct and still be on the force? How could this continue to be accepted and no one knows what's going on until it's too late? So we believe that a national database of police conduct should be implemented. And if you want to just find out more information about equity and transformation, You can go to our Facebook, Equity and Transformation, also Instagram, Eat Chicago, and on our Twitter, you can reach us through there at Chicago Eat. And so one of the things right now that we're doing in Chicago is we're having a United We Eat campaign. And this campaign is to build Black love, Black resilience, and Black sustainability. And we're doing this in the face of anti-Black racism, police terrorism, and COVID-19. So we're fighting on all fronts, right? But we understand that this is what needs to be done because we are a people that's dealing with not one or two, but we're dealing with multiple issues that's steady plaguing us and plaguing our communities. So we're not sitting back waiting for anyone else to do it. We're stepping to the forefront, understanding that this is how we solve our problems. We go out there and we solve them. We're not waiting for anyone else to do it.
Michonne, you have a caller.
Yes.
11:39.
Okay.
11:39. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was going. My question was more, tailored towards, with the marijuana becoming legalization and becoming more like, mainstream. As far as the licenses and things of that nature, I guess what is the legislation on, obtaining those licenses, being able to be a dispensary or being able to be a producer.
Well, I couldn't hear them. I wanted to ask if you all could repeat the question for me so I could answer
it. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, in regards to the legislation on, like, marijuana and it coming more mainstream and legalization here in Illinois, I know, like, as far as, like, the growth, it has to be in Illinois because it's not federally decriminalized or whatever the case may be. I guess what is the procedures of being able to get that license to you to be both either a producer and or distributor in the state of Illinois?
So it matters what city you're in, okay? And every city is granted a certain amount of licenses. And all you have to do is apply for the license. So, but right now, the licensing is closed, all right, because they have reached the limit for this year. But they are going to open up more applications where individuals can go in and apply. And so it's different licenses that you could apply for. You can apply for the dispensary license. You can apply for the cultivation license. There's also going to be a new license coming out as a craft grower. Right. So these licenses are there. The craft growers license is coming out. You just have to find out within your municipality when they will be available and then just go in and apply for them. The part that you need to remember is that individuals are and have been taking advantage of equity applicants because the whole thing, when they put the bill together, it was for equity applicants to be able to have more of a chance with getting the getting granted the license, right? Before this, it was almost impossible for an individual from the street to get the license. You had to have almost $2 million just to get started. You needed to have a blueprint, a security team. You need, and the blueprint had to show the warehouse that you was going to house the marijuana at, also your security team. And then, as you just mentioned, you have to understand that since it was not federal, and it still isn't federally regulated, no banks have wanted to hold your money. So you had to have a means to set up on how you was going to collect your money and how it was going to be transported. So it was a lot that went into it, and so what this bill did was able to give a certain percentage of points as a social equitable applicant, which would allow you to at least have a chance to, as you apply for the license, you have more of a chance of being granted the license. But if this isn't a cakewalk where you just walk through and it's like, hey, I've been disenfranchised, Black, I need this license and you all should give it to me. And that's the fight that we're having right now and continuing to have to fight because what we don't want to have happen is that we look up 3-4 years from now and everything that the bill was created to do, it doesn't actually accomplish that.
Okay, finish.
Hello?
Do you have another comment or question?
No, no. That was all for me. That was all for me.
Okay.
Are there any more questions or comments? Call 516-531-9540 and press 1.
Yeah, and just so individuals can understand real quick, when you're filling out the application, part of the application for a new entrance to the market, the act contains a scoring criteria, all right? And with this scoring criteria, 50 out of 250 points, so that means you need to get at least 250 out of 250 points is what you would get, right? So that means that even without being a social equitable applicant, you need to be able to get 200 points, right? And 50 points with being a social equitable applicant is what will push you over, right? But the remainder of the points are designated for the following, right? So 65 points is for security and record keeping. Another 65 points for your business plan, your financials, your operating, and your floor plan, which I just discussed. Then you get another 30 points for knowledge and experience, 15 points for sustainability of employee training plan, right? 5 points for labor and employment practices, another 5 points for your environmental plan, because you have to understand that growing all of this marijuana is going to have a tremendous effect on our environment, right? Individuals like everybody like, man, go ahead and grow that weed, but they don't understand how much water that it takes to grow a marijuana plant. They don't understand the smell, that skunk, how that really smells. So imagine, you know, you got 200 skunks all let loose at the same time. That's how some of these areas are going to be smelling, right? But it's not going to go away, okay? Then you have to be an Illinois owner, all right, which means that you have to have 51% or more ownership. And then if you're a veteran, you get 5 points. If you have a diversity plan, you get 5 points. So this is how they put all of this together, right? So the bottom line is you need to be able to get to at least 200 points. Now, the problem is how many individuals, and it's not saying that we don't have individuals in the street or in the informal community that know how to write a business plan and know how to operate their financials. But the problem is them transitioning to know how to put all of this on pen and paper, right? And being able to prove that they actually know this, because the whole thing is, and this was one of the biggest jokes that was going on, couldn't nobody open up before January 1st, right? If you open, even though we had the bill passed. Now, the problem is this. If you did open up before then, the question is going to be, where did you get your marijuana from? Because it was illegal before then. Right. So it's the same thing here when you're saying that you need to have a business plan, a financials operating, and then you're saying, OK, you don't have a high school diploma. So how do you know how to write this business plan? Because they need to be able to see and understand this a certain way. Right. But these are the individuals that we're saying that's what this bill is for. So that's why we'll continue to fight. We're not going to stop fighting. We want to make sure that this bill isn't just passed and it was just for show. We want to make sure that we get our equity in the communities that's so deserving of it.
Are there any more questions or comments? Dial 516-531-9540 and press 1. Okay, Alonzo, what else are you doing on the ground? Because, you know, we know that Chicago in certain areas was looted and tore up. So could you tell me what's going on the ground there?
You have another caller, 6598.
Okay.
Hold up. Yeah. 6598. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yes, I have a question. This is regarding the question that Michon asked. The one regarding what do you need to do, you know, to employ the 17 to 24-year-old. My question is, how can we start to change how the community and parents as a whole educate our children, and how to make these changes when their children's education is teaching them to work for someone else and the school system is setting their curriculum low for minorities, especially in the rural and city communities?
Okay, I'll start right off by saying that we have to change the narrative. We can't leave it to no one else to be responsible for the education, upbringing, and the value system of our youth, of our children, because they're our responsibility. So with that is we have to start teaching them money management principles. We have to start teaching them entrepreneurship. We have to start teaching them investment techniques. But more important than that, we have to start teaching them the value of not only self, but the appreciation and worth of others, along with how do, after you've made it, how do you give back? Because with these principles here, which goes back to who we truly are as a people, we don't have to depend on anyone else to take care of us. And the mindset for so long has been go get a job, all right, because that's the right thing to do. You go to school to learn, and then after you've learned and you receive your accreditation, you receive your diploma, now you've proven yourself. So now with this, you can take this piece of paper here, and then you can go get this job. You get this job, you work hard at this job, they're going to give you a salary, and with this salary, you'll be able to take care of yourself, and you'll be able to take care of your family, and then once you stop working that job, you'll be able to receive a pension, you have Social Security, and then you live happily ever after. You go and you retire, and everything's okay. And the truth is, what we're looking at, the reality is, it's all been a big lie that's been sold to us to make us continue exactly. to help the wealthier stay wealthy and while we stay at the bottom of the totem pole. But correct. If you can understand how to save, how to establish credit, how to create your own businesses, how to work with one another to create bigger businesses, how to keep the dollar circulating in your own communities, and how to value the fact that you're an owner and you're a producer, and not just a consumer, this starts changing the mindset. And it goes, and why this is so important is that we as a people tend to look and see what everybody else has, and then we put value in that instead of looking at who we are and what we have as a people, and putting our value back into ourselves. So when we start changing those things and doing that at home, doing it first for ourselves, and then letting it trickle into our youth, into our children, and then we're teaching them that this is where the real value is at in ourselves and in one another, that's what changes it.
Okay, you have another caller. Yes, you have another caller. Come on, baby. 5240. 5240, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Oh, yes, Alonzo. What I was trying to say is that was excellent what you just said. That's how I was raised, that you just go to school and graduate and get a job. And that was one of the biggest downfalls of, you know, my life. I mean, you know, just go to school. And then as I got older, I was realizing that it was so much more to that than just going to school, graduating and getting a job. You know, it really set me up for failure, you know, in the long run. So what you were saying was just, Alonzo, just straight on, and I want to appreciate you for doing a good job, but that's one of my downfalls that I'm working with my kids, so I'm trying to get them to see a better future than what I had. But it's more than just education. It's more than just go to school. You got to, you know, save your money. You got to manage your money. You got to do all these other stuff, you know what I mean? So I just want to just commend you, you know what I mean, for everything that you said tonight. You know, I agree, and I just want to just commend you just to, you know, keep up the good work, brother.
I appreciate you, and thank you so much for that. And I want to just say that I truly accept everything that you said, and what just happened is a thing that is a practice that we should continue to keep up, and that's actually acknowledging one another and the positive things that we are doing, because we're so quick to break each other down, and it's a lot that we could say that, you know, we don't do right. But when we start acknowledging the things that we are doing right, start admitting when we have failed at, but also looking at where we've achieved that and concentrate more on what we're doing right, what we're doing better, and looking at where we're not doing as good at and making that better, that's when we actually start moving forward. So I want to thank you for acknowledging me. And, man, you don't have to stop where you're at. And even though that system puts you in that situation, you can definitely come up out of that, because it's never too late to learn, and it's never too late to start implementing what you know is right. And then just watch it grow. Just watch it grow.
You have another caller, a caller 3695. You're on the air. 3695, you're on the air. 3695, you're on the air.
Hello?
You're on
Hello.
The air. Go ahead.
Question. Yes. I'm from Tallahassee, Florida, and I would like to know what's all being done about, I hear Illinois, but I want to hear, can this stuff be done in other parts of the nation?
Yes, it most certainly can. And a way for that to be done is to listen to all of these principles, first of all, and anybody can do this. Anyone can say, I want better. Anyone can say, I'm not going to stand for these injustices. Anyone can say, I'm going to do something better today to better myself, right? When we started talking about this conversation tonight, we started talking about Black self-care, right? So just think about what you could do for yourself today to show that you appreciate yourself, to not only show that you appreciate yourself and show some Black self-care to yourself, but then start showing some Black self-care to your community. For example, yesterday, June 9th, was our day one of the United We Eat campaign, and we committed 24 hours to Black love. And so one of the things that Equity and Transformation did was, we know that there was a lot of rioting, a lot of buildings were torn up. Chicago, it looks like a war zone hit. Again, because a lot of parts of our city, it always looked like the war zones hit it. But the stores and everything were torn down, broken into. So what Equity and Transformation did was go back into these communities, and they cleaned up the communities to show that there is Black love. And we asked the whole city to come out. So it wasn't just people of color that was there, but it was people from all races that was able to show that, you know what, we're going to support this, and we're going to understand and acknowledge that we're going to have Black love, and we're going to do that for 24 hours. So you can do that right in your community. You can do that part right there, and then show yourself some Black self-care, and then also show some Black love to your community. All right, so what we're in the middle of right now is between June 10th and the 12th, we're committing 3 days of Black self-care. So we're taking 3 days out to take care of us. Since we've taken care of the community, now we want to focus on us. And then on June 13th, which will be day three for us, we're committing to 30 days of only buying from Black-owned businesses. So the whole thing is to start changing our mindset, unplugging ourselves from this system of we just throwing garbage down in our communities. We're seeing injustices done, and we're not addressing them. No, we're saying that we can clean up and take care of ourselves. We're also saying that we can definitely take care of ourselves. We can make sure that we're eating better. We can make sure that we're loving better. We can make sure that we're caring better. We can make sure that we're acknowledging the fact that we do matter. And then we can also say, you know what, our dollars matter also. And then we can show the whole world what it looks like for us to shop with ourselves for 30 days. And if you all don't have the means to do that, that's one of the first things you can start working on, saying, where are the black-owned businesses? Where are the black-owned manufacturers? Start to do the research to figure out where your people are at and how you can support them. And if they're not there, how do you get them there? Because now this is how we go back to the entrepreneurship part. Instead of somebody else taking care of us, we start taking care of ourselves and we start creating our own jobs. So those are the things that anyone, anywhere could start picking up to do. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Okay, you have another caller?
Are there any more callers?
Yes, you have a caller, 1233. You're on the air. You're on the air. 1233.
Hi. Hello. 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 Yes.
Hello.
In regards, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Back to regards to the marijuana information about the getting the license, what is the cost and where can we go to, like, find the information, like, online for ourselves to look it up?
You can go to the governor's website, and they have all of the information there. And the costs fluctuate with the different licenses that you're trying to apply for. So you can go to illinois.gov, and you're able to get all of the information regarding the cannabis bill and also the cannabis licenses.
Okay, thank you.
And
thank
also,
you,
if you're a social equitable applicant, some of the licenses and the fees, you can get grants for them, and it'll show you how you can apply for that also.
You have another caller, 8051. You're on the air. 8051, you're on the air.
Okay, Mr. Waheed,
yes.
Agree with what the other caller said about you, that you're very informative. Okay, just say, for instance, if I wanted to get my license to grow marijuana, do I have to hold an amount of land to do this?
I want to make sure that I'm hearing your question. You're saying if you want to grow marijuana, do you have to own the land?
Do I have to own a certain amount of land? Or is that a certain amount?
No.
You have to
at all.
You don't? Okay.
No. You can actually grow marijuana in your home with a craft grower's license. You can grow up to 5 plants.
Okay, now, the 5 plants I'm allowed to sell.
Yes, if you have the craft grower's license. But then you also can have 5 plants for your personal use.
I'm not a user. Mine is more. And I also agree with you about, you said you all set aside certain days that you want to use to buy from black-owned businesses. What if you don't have in your area?
If you don't have them in your area, we're suggesting and strongly pushing for individuals to start creating the infrastructure for that, and start reaching outside of their communities if they don't have it, where you can get the support to do that. And I could definitely connect you all to the black farmers growers who will have no problem with helping to do that.
And you say all this information is under the Illinois government?
Yes, illinois.gov.
Okay.
But as far as the trying to grow your own food or setting up the infrastructure to have your own food, I'm going to connect you to the farmer growers, black farmers, the Black Farmer Grow Collective, and they will be able to give you all of that information.
Well, thank you.
That's no problem. One of the things that we're doing for the 30 days is we're going to be given, so we've created packages of food that could last you for the 30 days that will cost $120. And all of the food is grown by Black farmers. All of the meat by Black-owned individuals that are their own butchers, take care of their own poultry. They do it all. So it's not like we don't have our own infrastructure set up. It's so often that we just don't use them.
Another question for you. Like, when the state is really open back up, do you travel to maybe give seminars or something on what you were talking about on the air? Do you go to different places also, like different cities?
Yes, I do. Yes, so with me being a fellow for the Electoral Justice League, I travel throughout the Midwest, but I have no problem going to where I'm needed to make sure that the message is heard loud and clear, that we as a people are going to move forward. We have so much potential. We built this world. There's no place in the world that we haven't touched and that we haven't impacted. And when you look at America, we built it from the ground up. So there's nothing that we can't do. We have to now turn all those resources back to ourselves. And I have no problem with going anywhere and galvanizing, empowering, and informing our people of who we are and what we can do.
Yeah, because it's hard to get like the money that was allocated for the small business person. None of it, there's really three in Southern Illinois, Williamson County, that would qualify, and they weren't overlooked. Everybody else got that $25,000, and none of the Black business people got any money at all.
I can definitely believe that. We as a people have often been overlooked, and I think that it will continue if we continue to stand for it. One of the greatest issues and the greatest tools that I believe that we have is as we stick together and put all our differences aside, and instead of looking at climbing over one another, we start looking at climbing together, and that'll make us so much more powerful. Whereas what they're giving out, we won't even need it because we have so much ourselves. We can't forget Black Wall Street. We can't forget the fact that we had entire communities, right, that we owned. We owned all of the stores. We owned the schools. We owned all of the houses. We owned everything there. And I think that it's time for us to get back to that mindset, whereas we don't have to ask anyone for anything. Because to this day, when you look, Africa didn't ask the world for anything. Africa did not ask the world for anything, and it gave the world everything. So I think that we should understand, again, who we truly are and start moving in that mindset.
I'll rephrase part of what you said. You said Africa gave the world everything. No, I'll say the world took a lot of things from Africa.
Well, I have to agree with you with that.
I agree also. Alonso, I want to thank you for coming on the Cutting Edge Show, and I'm definitely going to have you back again. And I want to thank everyone for listening, and I want everyone to have a great evening.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon.